What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes tales are quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go! Booty, booty. It's time to get this party started. Booty, booty. It's time to get this party started.
You're listening to FP Interviews, in-depth conversations with interesting people. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
It's Tuesday, it's Footy Prime, the podcast, a really full house today. We're going to talk about, briefly, a little Leeds, a little Jesse Marsh, a little Man City later in today's show. But to begin with, as promised on Sunday, we have a special guest, backed by popular demand. It's not his first appearance. He's a veteran of Footy Prime, the podcast. It is Canada Soccer President Nick Bontis. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here. Happy 2023 to everybody.
And everybody are here. We have Craig, we have Wonga, we have JC, we have Jimmy and Amy here as well for a Tuesday edition.
Yeah, I just show up. Popular, no one invites Nick. Me.
You're like George Costanza. You have to keep showing up. You'll think I'm still working here. Nick, so much to get to. It's been a busy few months, you might say, for Canada Soccer. It's approaching almost 2 months since little Leo Messi lifted the World Cup trophy. So you've had time to decompress, I'm sure, from Qatar. Looking back now, how would you rate the Canadian performance on the pitch?
That's a great question. I think it was left wanting for most fans, including me as a fan. You know, you just, we're spoiled to a certain extent because, you know, let's step back. We'll go back a year and go back 2 years. So 2 years ago, no one predicted. No one even thought about it. It ain't going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. Go back a year ago, it's like, we're close. Holy geez, we just beat the U.S. We spanked Mexico in Edmonton. We beat them in Hamilton. Wow, man, we're only a couple of games away. And then, of course, you got Jamaica, and it's like, boom, we're going. It's a miracle. So then you go, and the problem is from, like, I don't know, April to, November? That's too long, and everybody's heightened excitement and motivation. Oh, my God, we're going to go there. We're going to do well. First time in 36 years. Of course, we forget to understand who we're playing against, right? Two countries that made it to the semis, number two ranked country in the world. But let's just leave that aside for a second. For me as a fan, I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. We show up to the Belgium game, and I'm looking at Courtois warming up. I'm looking at De Bruyne warming up. And then I'm looking at our guys, and I'm like, come on, boys, let's go. Let's do this. I got Gianni Infantino beside me, you know, in the master leather chair. I got Victor on this side, and Victor and I are like, this is it. This is awesome. And I'm telling you, man, 10 minutes into the game, you saw how we started. It was like unbelievable. It was rocket fuel, 100 miles an hour. And then we get the penalty kick. I literally turned to Victor before the penalty kick was taken. And I go, Victor, we're going to win the World Cup, man. Like that's how euphoric I was. And I'm sure how euphoric every Canadian fan was, without a doubt. And then again, of course, as the tournament went on, our expectations started to get a little bit more real. And I walk away now, you know, what is it? It's been 2 months from the experience. And my brain is all about now, how do we prep ourselves better for 26? That's what my brain's all about. Mm-hmm.
I was actually a little bit concerned about all you guys and sitting up there. There wasn't a balcony. And I wasn't sure about the bylaws in Qatar, but I'm not sure they would pass here.
No, there was no cover. I mean, Craig, there's literally a glass, and then the game starts and the glass goes down. So you're looking at like a bloody, 100-foot drop. And here's the thing that you guys don't know. I mean, some of you, Craig, Jimmy, Sarms, like some of you know my wife, right? Stacy is like, she just wants to make sure that I don't embarrass the hell out of myself. And I'm excitable. I'm a fan through my DNA. The whole time she is messaging me on my phone saying, you need to settle down. You need to calm down. Stop jumping. Stop screaming. Stop cheering. I swear to God, thank God the camera wasn't on me, man, because I was a freak. I was probably the most freak president of anybody in all of the World Cup, because every time we had a breakaway, every time we had a tackle, every time we had an opportunity, I was freaking out. I don't even want to tell you what happened when Fonzie scored the header 90 seconds in the Croatia game. Me and Victor were literally jumping up and down like little children. That's what was happening.
Well, the camera wasn't on you because it was on the guy beside you, in Gianni Infantino, who apparently part of the contract was he must be shown a certain number of times, but not with his cell phone in his hand, not looking at his phone, looking at the game. That was.
I got to be honest with you. He was great. The whole time I had interactions with him, he just kept on saying that Canada was the darling story of the World Cup. You know, the expectations from a global perspective were low, but I think we impressed a lot of people and created a lot of fans.
How was it, Nick, for you though, when you were there at the world stage and then meeting other presidents and delegates throughout FIFA? It must have been some experience for you.
Well, look, it was an awesome experience. First of all, again, it was like being invited to a party in high school where the cool kids hang out and you're the geek that's never been invited to this party for 36 years. Right? You open the door, you look inside and you're like, damn, there's Brazil, there's Argentina, there's France. And as you know, Jimmy, at these World Cup things, all the legends hang out there too, right? So I got like Arsene Wenger and Mourinho and the original Ronaldo. Like these, I'm freaking out just as a fan. But that's what it was like. Canada really had to earn respect. We were first timers. We were babies. But I'm telling you, our performance right from the get-go, right from the Belgium game and then continuing on through the tournament, really, really shone a bright light on us because everybody knew that we were hosting in 26 anyway. So they knew that we were on the ascendancy.
Did you pull the Sharpie out of the back pocket and get any autographs?
No, I did not because, you know, my wife would have yelled at me. But for those of you that are on Instagram, just go check out my wife's account. She literally has one of those selfies with everybody, including the love of her life, David Beckham, who eventually became her best friend. She watched the final with David Beckham.
How about that Salt Boy guy?
That guy, man, because I'm going to get sued or charged. Or, I don't know. I'm not allowed to say negative things, but all I'm going to say is this. I always felt there was something odd about the guy. And then I finally met him and man, there's just something odd about the guy. And I think you guys probably heard, right, that he somehow found himself on the field, you know, hanging out with Messi's kids. He actually kissed the trophy. I didn't see it, but I think I heard.
Yeah, he didn't. He held it. That's forbidden. You can't do that.
So he's been fine. He will no longer ever be anywhere near a FIFA World Cup because FIFA takes that stuff seriously. So I don't know how the hell he found his way down there, but I'm telling you, man, that guy could open any door. It was funny because, you know, when you're in the room and you see, you know, all the famous players walk by and who generates a lot of buzz, let's be honest, David Beckham, wherever he goes, he just generates a lot of buzz, right? But when this guy walked through, my God, man, it was like the Messiah had entered. And I didn't really know who he was. The kids had to tell me who he was.
But Gianni knew who he was. Aren't those guys tight? That's how
they are tight. They were definitely at one of his restaurants in Doha sometime during that trip, Amy. Of course, I wasn't invited because, you know, I'm just the Canada guy. But there's definitely a connection between between Johnny and Mr. Salt May there.
There was anyway.
There was.
Johnny will get a few steaks before he finds them.
Maybe.
I don't know, man. Having dinner with Salt Bay and Infantino would be probably the worst dinner party I could ever possibly imagine. I don't know. Jeez, I'd rather go out for dinner with Wonga and Craig. Honestly, be just awful.
Me too.
So did you get much work done there? I mean, was it all schmoozing and cocktail parties, or like, did you hit the ground and was it nuts and bolts football talk as well?
Yeah, tons of work, and I'm going to tell you guys that I mean, look, people don't see the stuff that happens behind the scenes, you know, sitting there in bloody boring hotel rooms. But I can tell you, look at the outcomes. A perfect outcome is something that was announced a few days ago. You guys talked about it, but I am telling you how massive this news is. Copa America 24. Massive news. We can talk about what that means for Canada, but much of the nuts and bolts of Copa America 24 were all negotiated in Doha and Qatar. Because you understand, that's the only place where all the key players come together, right? The federation people, the sponsors, the broadcasters. And, I've learned, I've only been involved as president for a couple of years, but I'm learning at that level, at the confederation level, there's just so much to do, so much to talk about. You know, who's going to host? How are you going to share the revenues? Who's going to broadcast? What's the schedule going to be like? So I'm going to say kudos to, you know, Victor, obviously, and his counterpart at CONMEBOL, but even all the presidents, myself and, you know, Cindy Cohn in the U.S., Yon de Luisa in Mexico. I mean, we all have reasons of why we want to be part of Copa America 24. I'm sure we all know what the reasons are. And all I'm going to say to you guys is we are so lucky because, you know what? Sandwiched in between two World Cups that we get to go to back to back is another World Cup because the Copa America 24 is just like another World Cup.
Hey, Nick, tell us the importance of the Nations League as well.
Yeah. So the
and it's Copa America.
So this was a problem, right? Because everybody has its own brand. The World Cup, everybody knows what it is. The Gold Cup, everybody knows what it is. And the Nations League was always treated like this fourth cousin that nobody cared about, right? Now that's gone away because the route to Copa America 24 is through the Nations League. So all of a sudden, these games are critical because we don't want to miss it. All six teams in CONCACAF have to qualify for Copa America 24. The 10 teams from CONMEBOL, they're in. But, you know, Mexico, U.S., Canada, of course, everybody else, Costa Rica, Panama, Jamaica, all the other countries that want to go because they know what it's going to mean for them. And for us in Canada, it means everything because we know going into 26. John knows because he presented to the board a few days ago that one of the challenges going into Qatar was competition, right? Like, I mean, look at the teams we played. We played CONCACAF teams essentially for two full years. Then we played a game against Japan and we played a game against Bahrain. You could hardly say that we were playing against elite level competition to set us up, right? For Croatia, Belgium and Morocco. We got to change that for 26. And that's the gift that Copa America 24 is going to give us. Imagine Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, Chile.
We have to stay in that group A though.
Yes, we do. We have to stay in that group A. So Curaçao and Honduras at the end of the month, that's why, man, they just became critical because we got to stay in Group A. And then, of course, it's the following Nations League that'll dictate getting into Copa America. So John laid out his plan for the, for the board in terms of what we're going to do for 23 and 24. And let's be honest, it's a priority. It has to be a priority to participate in Copa America 24.
You make a good point about competition because when we had John Osorio on a few weeks ago, he talked about, the almost a surprise when not so much Belgium because we were expecting so much more from them, but from Croatia, he said it was just a different level that he had never seen before.
Yeah. You know what? That's what I learned, Craig, too. I mean, you watch the games. I mean, let's be honest, the first 20 minutes of Belgium, the first 15, 20 minutes of Croatia, it's just Canada euphoria. You know what I mean? It's just being there, all the guys. 100% rocking on all eight cylinders. It was mostly that type of soccer. But then guess what? You give the Croatians some time to settle down. You give the Croatians some time to figure out how are we going to unlock, the midfield, given that we own the best midfield on the planet. And then, we started to show a little bit of our deficiencies. Obviously, some of our players got tired. Stakio got injured. And the rest of the story, I don't have to tell you. But that's what the world-class teams do, man. They study you. They figure out. Let me give you an opposite perspective, okay? So John, he had difficulty in figuring, okay, what are we going to do with the midfield, right? You got Estacio who's getting injured. You got Atiba who's running on some tired legs. And we didn't – what's the word? We didn't pull the trigger, let's say, as fast as we could have, right? Compare that with what France and Deschamps did in the final against Argentina. When Deschamps had to pull the trigger – to make those changes, because Argentina was spanking them, don't forget, he did it, right? That's the difference, right? Making sure that we all have the ability and the trust. And the challenge with us for Canada is, we got 11 that are awesome, maybe number 12 and number 13. Things drift off a little bit after that, right? We don't have 23 guys top to bottom.
No, and I think that was a problem as well, Nick, is that when you do look at your bench, you're looking thinking, if I got players that are going to come on and make an impact here in this game, are they going to make a difference? Or do I hold on a little bit and see how these guys get through this little tough spell? And now when you're looking at a Croatia as well, you're talking about experienced players. Not once in that match did they panic.
No,
When we went, when they went down 1-0, it was not a problem. We still got 80 minutes left in this match, and we're going to get through it. And that's also the difference as well, the experience that they have.
But the way soccer games unravel is also an experience. Like, I'll give you an example. There's some people that are arguing, some analysts are arguing, it was a mistake for us to score 90 seconds in. Like, how could you argue that it's a mistake to score? Yeah. Who would ever believe in that argument? But I think about it for a second. Had Fonzie scored the header in the, 30th minute, 40th minute? May have been a different game. You score it in the 90th second. Guess what happens? All of a sudden, Luka Modric says, yeah, I'm not dealing with this. Don't you worry about it. And then, boom, they came, right?
Yeah, but maybe the criticism there is that there was no adjustment after that early goal.
Yeah.
And well, then the trust that John puts in his players and his players have in him, he leaves his captain in, Atiba, who clearly had tired legs, and he should have pulled the trigger, to coin your phrase.
Yeah.
So is that experience that he's gleaned from that tournament?
Yeah, 100%. And the one thing that we all know about John is just the operational specificity and the care he takes in getting his tactics ready. No one will ever argue that he's never unprepared. The one thing you guys don't know about John is how he comes into a boardroom to put his hand up and say, mea culpa. You know what I mean? This is how we screwed up, and this is how we're going to learn, and this is how we're going to do better. Right? That's not necessarily the John persona that you see out in, you know, on YouTube or in the world, right? He's the consummate motivator and tactician. But that's what we appreciate as a board, because even as board members, we're all soccer people. We understand the game. It doesn't take a rocket science to figure out, Amy, what happened in the 30th minute with Atiba. You could all see it. My wife saw it, who knows nothing about soccer. So, you know, these are the things that we all have to learn as we mature, right? So when I say we, I include Bev in the argument as well, right? Bev is also learning now how to mature as she sets herself up for New Zealand and Australia. She's got her own Atibas to worry about, if you know what I mean, Amy, in between the lines. So we've got to figure out, you know, what's the right approach, not only on the men's side, but the women's side as well.
So that same priority that you're giving John in talking about Copa America and presenting to the board, are you also according to Bev in there in the Women's World Cup year?
I always have Bev present first, Amy. Don't you worry. So it was.
Well, that's a good first start.
It was Bev who presented first to the board, because obviously we're in that World Cup year. She's off the She Believes Cup. You know, there's a lot of business ahead for Bev, as you guys know, because the Olympics is an entirely different, you know, beast on the women's side than it is on the men's side. So, you know, you look at the She Believes Cup, and then you compound right away with World Cup preparation, which then leads into Olympic preparation. And as you know, Amy, we got a bloody critically important home and away with Jamaica. So nothing is written in stone, right? So when you talk about the long-term plan about what players are coming in, what players are not coming in, who are you going to bring over from Europe? Who are you going to leave home from Europe? I'm sorry, but Bev doesn't have the luxury now. She can't say, oh, the Jamaica home and away, we won't worry about it anymore. Now the Jamaica home and away becomes the critical incident in between the World Cup and the Olympics. But I'm going to say that's the same thing with John too. Before Copa America 24 was publicly announced, I mean, I knew it was coming down the pipe because I'm in those meetings. John didn't know that League of Nations was going to be so critical now to get us into Copa America 24. So in his mind, his plan was, well, I'll give a couple of B guys an opportunity to impress themselves, give a couple younger guys an opportunity to present themselves, right? Now, Bev and John have that same issue where, yeah, you want to bring the younger people in, but at the same time, you got to win today. Because you don't win today, you don't get what's coming down at the end of the golden pot, as they say. So the job has become increasingly difficult, Amy, for two people who already had difficult jobs.
Yeah, you say John obviously has learned from the World Cup too. He admits himself, you know, the whole Croatia circus wasn't ideal. But then last Wednesday, we wake up and there's these reports from New Zealand about John Herbin's about to sign up with the national team there. And we're like, holy shit, what is going on here? How surprised were you when you woke up and read those reports, honestly?
I'm not going to use the same words as you, but just pretend I just did, okay? I used the exact same words when I saw the coverage of the, the country in Doha. It's not the type of thing a guy like me wants to hear. Let's be honest. Okay. Because the bullets are going to come in my direction fast and furious. And look, half the time, I don't even know why the bullets are coming, because the stories are faster than what reality is, right? So to be honest with you, yeah, like all of you, I'm no different. I'm going to be honest. I woke up Wednesday morning, look at my phone like we all do, and I'm like, what is going on, man? Like, this thing has just blown up. How is this even possible? And you're just trying to get a sense of what's true, what's not true. Guys, let me remind all of you, and I said this in my statement, he was just in front of the board presenting his plan for 23, 24, 25. So you got to understand, as president and all of our board who just met with him and Bev, there's not even an inkling that somebody is leaving or somebody's complaining or somebody is talking. None of that is even happening. So as we all live in the world of social media, it's not about validity and is it truth or is it integrity of journalism? Nah, man, it's about speed. And okay, I don't blame Gourdi in New Zealand. Maybe he decided to create a story. What was really bothersome for me is you had outlets in Canada who are respected outlets, The Star, Globe and Mail, The Sun, just, you know, pick an outlet. All they did was perpetuate a tweet that was sent, you know, from halfway around the world. So obviously we came together at Canada Soccer pretty quickly, I might add. You know, people always wonder, well, why can't you guys just release something right away? Guys, it's not like a 14-year-old on Instagram or TikTok that can just type something and click send, right? We have a whole bunch of hurdles that we have to get through. It's me, it's Earl Cochran, who's actually responsible as the CEO of the organization. It's our communications department. Then we got to clear things through our lawyers to make sure that we're not stepping on anybody's toes. And then let's not forget, we got to publish everything in French as well. So you got to send everything for translation. It's got to come back. I'm not making excuses. It still was a few hours before we finally got something out, but I'm hoping that we're getting better and faster. We got it out as quickly as we could.
Now, that's fair enough. I think the timing of the story was almost the story. But John admitted that he had conversations with New Zealand. He had been approached. Uh-huh. He's under contract through the World Cup. Does it concern you, though, that he's talking to other bodies or at least open to those conversations?
No, it doesn't concern me, and I'll tell you why. I think we got an awesome opportunity here. I think a coach who would look at a country that guaranteed it two World Cups back to back, A, one of them to host, B, and now a Copa America in between, C, to go from whatever we are, 40, 50 ranked in the world to triple digits ranked in the world. For me, I'm like, John, okay, I mean, you want to come to me and tell me Brazil is interested, then we can have a serious conversation. So, you know, so I take it from that perspective as well. I also take it from the fact that there was nothing logical leading up to Wednesday morning, Charms, okay? Like, John already came out in public to all the press in November, the day before the World Cup started, to say, hey, I'm staying right through 26. I ain't going anywhere. So again, you know, if you want to ask the question, how did this happen? That's a whole separate podcast that we're going to have to put together because frankly, I don't know all the details and I don't want to know to a certain extent. I know that he's under contract. I know, you know, some people are arguing, oh, he did it to get more money out of, you know, Canada Soccer. That didn't happen either. Trust me, you don't negotiate coaches' salaries in a two-hour span between 7 in the morning on a Wednesday versus 9 in the morning on a Wednesday. So let's be real about that, okay? What do I think happened? It's all supposition. I think there were intermediaries involved with intermediaries and agents, and Jimmy knows this world. Craig knows this world. You're talking to a whole bunch of people. You don't even know if they really represent who they're telling you they represent. You know what I mean? So maybe New Zealand thought they had more than what they really had. I don't know. Did John reply if somebody asked him, would you be interested in the New Zealand job? Maybe he did. That's something you can ask John. You know, if he's an attractive coach in terms of the global marketplace, I'm going to take the high road and say, good. I'm happy that both of our coaches are attracted to a bunch of people around the world.
Yeah, because the Leeds position just opened up. So
I did see that, Amy. I did see that.
Hey, Jesse's going to the States, apparently, right? That's one of the hot rumors right now.
Yeah, you know what? Speaking of the U.S., funny, I got a great relationship with Cindy. And, you know, when I'm dying, going through hell, she seems to be okay. And then when she's dying, going through hell, I seem to be okay. We seem to oscillate in terms of whatever, you know, we got to deal with. But, you know, I don't know, we're strange fellows in a way, but we both go through the same stuff. You know what I mean? Where we're dealing with a with two countries that are both in the ascendancy for what football means to them. You're dealing with two countries whose women's programs, I would argue, have a higher profile globally in prestige. You're dealing with two countries who've promised, you know, pay equity for their women and men. There's a lot of commonalities between the U.S. and soccer. And you're dealing with two presidents who are volunteers, which is extremely rare in the FIFA world of 211 federations. So, I look at, you know, what Cindy's going through right now, and I wish her all the best, because I know it's not easy to handle that issue down there.
You mentioned pay equity. You brought it up there, Nick. So we have to go CBA now. It's gone very quiet.
Yeah.
I guess I know you mentioned last year how the players' side got union now. They've lawyered up, and it's about time they did that. Where do we stand right now with the CBA? Are we close? Are we getting closer?
Yeah, I would argue by definition we're closer, because you know what's going to happen one day. So by definition we're closer. I do want to also say that we agreed that we were going to put a moratorium on it, right, during the World Cup. So I hope no one expected anything to be done in, you know, November or Christmas time or coming back, because that was the time to focus on you know, what the business was at hand. Now that we've since returned, obviously Earl and our legal counsel have reached out to their legal counsel, because the time has come to put this to bed. I have made no qualms about wanting to get this thing done last year. I just want to get this thing done. But I also know that CBAs take a long time, man. Like, they're not easy documents to put together. Our document is going to be even more complicated because it's a tri-party document, because we promised pay equity, right? So if the women agree, for example, it doesn't matter, because the men have to agree as well, right? So we all three of us have to be in agreement. I would also argue that we still have a little bit of time. And I know this sounds weird, but let me be completely frank with you. We don't have the money yet, right? So FIFA hasn't sent the money. FIFA won't send the World Cup prize money to their respective nations, probably, I'm guessing, until the end of first quarter, which is the end of March. So I'm not saying that I don't want the agreement to be in place, but even if we signed it today, like, we got no money to give. We you know, so we might as well wait anyway. Even though I know it doesn't sound logical, because you always want to have these problems solved ahead of time. I think what will happen is once the word gets out, hey, CSA's got, you know, 9-10 million bucks in the bank, and they're sweating to spend it and give it to the right people, you're going to see the wheel starting to spin a little faster, because now the players will know, okay, CSA can't sit on the money for long. It's our responsibility to distribute it. Let's sign the deal and distribute it.
But pay equity is agreed, right? I think you mentioned that last
time. I agreed to that in January of 2022, over a year ago. I spoke to the women, Zoom call, face-to-face. I said, I promise you I will deliver pay equity. And the reason I could do that, Sharms, is because in December, so you're going back now, December of 21, I told you I was good friends with another president. I'm not going to name her right now. But that other president also told me what was coming down the pipe, if you know what I mean. So, you know, we communicate with each other. Now, you got to understand, the deal actually never became public until May 18 of 2022. That's when it went public, right? The new pay equity deal with U.S. Soccer. And let me remind everybody, that was 2 weeks before our infamous June match in Vancouver, right? Most of the players, I'm going to be honest with you, had no idea that deal had already been consummated out of the U.S. It wasn't really Canada news. It was mostly U.S. news. I had known that we were going to deliver it because it's the right thing to do, but we got to look at, you know, soccer is a global game. Not a lot of FIFA nations out there that have delivered on pay equity, right? And pay equity is, in a way, it's a stopgap. Why? Because it's the FIFA purse that's causing the pay equity, you know, disequilibrium, if I could use the economic term. It's not my responsibility to solve the disequilibrium. Does everybody understand that? Like, it's not Canada Soccer's responsibility. It's FIFA's responsibility to solve the disequilibrium. But we believe, just like Cindy Cohn in the U.S. Soccer believes, that it's going to take time if it ever happens. We got to make the difference in the meantime, because it's happened. It's gone on too long.
But the men are on board regarding that side of things?
Yeah, I think the men are now on board. But I mean, I think originally, if I was a betting man, and you can ask the men yourself, I'm not going to speak for them. You know, part of it is kind of like saying, okay, do I really, you know, need to participate in this? Why did I participate in this? Was I really supposed to be a part of this? I think all those questions were raised very, very quickly. But I think as Canadians, we value this, all Canadians, including all the men and all the women. So in my opinion, all players, both sides, and I think the men have obviously come out on many occasions in the last several months to say, yeah, we're not going to do anything without pay equity. So the answer to your question is it's going to happen 100%.
So once that's achieved, though, and you've been championing the pay equity, which is fabulous, and then hopefully down the line the CBA gets done, but then how do you ensure after that's secured that Canada Soccer creates an environment so that there's equitable investment in the women's program and the men's program?
Yeah, so, Amy, that's a great question. And let me say this. We looked at the data. I looked at it myself before I was elected. And I think if you go back, I mean, the data that we were looking at is going back maybe a five-year period. So going from maybe 2014 to 2019, I think that was the data that was available to me. The amount of money that we spent in both programs, literally, Amy, was like this. Like it was almost identical year in and year out. So I think what we're trying to say here is we don't want that gap to get any bigger, which we don't want. But we also recognize a couple of things that happened, and I'm not making excuses, but the reality, COVID happened, and COVID just so happened while the men were going through qualification, which made it infinitely more difficult and more expensive to support the men to get through their qualification. And I think what we're trying to do right now is make sure that we come up with a system so that we don't have to worry about always saying that one group is getting less than another group. There were years, Amy, where the men got lower money than the women did, right? And now there's years where, obviously, I don't think it's rocket science for anybody to estimate that in 2022, we probably, although the numbers haven't been audited and come out yet, I'm going to guess that the men investment was a little bit higher. But we also know that in 23, we have, you know, a She Believes Cup and a Women's World Cup all leading to an Olympic. So you have to look at it from a quadrennial cycle. That's what I've learned. Over a quadrennial cycle, let's make sure that we're investing equally in two of our top national teams. Because I think it's not really, Amy, a men's team versus women's team debate. I'll tell you what the debate is. The elite teams have a halo effect. We want to invest in our elite. And when I say elite teams, I mean our first teams. The problem now is everything underneath. U20s, U17s, U15s, para, futsal. That's a problem because we invested heavily on the first teams. Why? Because we had no choice. Why? Because during COVID, FIFA canceled U15, U17. CONCACAF canceled U15, U17. So people are like, well, how come you didn't have any camps? Well, I'm sorry. I would love to have camps for everybody all the time, but we're not going to have a camp for an age group where there's no corresponding tournament either that was already canceled by FIFA and CONCACAF. So what we, in a sense, did was all that money that we had budgeted for those youth teams, we basically just percolated it up to the women's team and to the men's team. So my big headache right now, Amy, is not that we're going to make them equal. That's an understood. That is a given. My headache is how do we now get back to the youth soccer assortment? How do we give John and Bev access to the next 15, 17, and 20-year-old that's going to be on the first team come 2026? That's the real big challenge. So I'm proud to say that the 17s have left for Guatemala, as you know, on the boys' side. So, you know, they've got a competition, and our objective in our strategic plan as a board is that we want every single youth team to make their corresponding FIFA tournament. That's our objective. So 17s, 20s, if they don't make their corresponding FIFA tournament, you know, that's something that needs to be reviewed. So on the boys' side, on the 17s, they're going back. And I mean, if you just look at the program for the 17s, they had a camp in December. They had another integration camp before December. They had some preseason matches against Mexico. I know, guys, it's small, but I'm telling you, it's way better than what we used to have. Okay, like there were teams that would show up at CONCACAF on the U15 and 17 side. They'd be introducing each other. They'd be introducing themselves to each other for the first time on day one of that camp because we didn't have the resources to give them any competition before. So that's something that we also need to work on.
The top end of the game is one thing with the women get, the men get, but it's the underneath is the most important thing as well to talk about that because most people don't give a hoot what they're going to get. But I do worry about development and giving opportunities and how, where do we go and where does that money come from for that development to make these youth tournaments, U17 and whatnot in the future? And can we sustain it and can we take the next step, Nick?
So let me add a couple things, Craig, because it's a challenge. So let me also add duels for a second. Okay. So you look at a wicked player on the women's side, Simi Awuo, right? Born in Atlanta, US, Nigerian roots, right? We gave Bev gave her an opportunity for the U20s, performed awesome. And now, you know, she's going to be joining us and could theoretically fight for a position on the first team. On the men's side, we have a void. Now, let me explain what the void is. For 2 years during COVID, we didn't have U15 or U17. We lost that whole demographic bulge. That consisted of, and I'm just using round numbers here, okay? The 2003s, 2004s, and 2005s. Think of that three age group cohort. That three age group cohort, Craig, didn't really get a chance to perform in front of John or Mauro, you know, or any of the national team staff. That three age cohort didn't really get a chance to develop their own international profile. Competing in CONCACAF, competing in FIFA for Canada helps because you get to now go with your agent and go potentially to a club in Europe or a higher competitive status. So here I've got this 3 year cohort group that we have to somehow revitalize while at the same time delivering now for the 06s and 07s, 08s. That's how old we are, right? That are now starting to compete in Guatemala. So I'm fearful that that's a demographic bulge of players that we didn't give an opportunity to. I know it's true. We have to figure out a way to solve that problem. And the other thing we have to do is figure out how to get duels earlier because duels want a relationship at the 15, 17, 20 level. It's infinitely more difficult to get a duel to come on board when they've already been a first team club player, right? And they're in their mid 20s. So it's double, Craig. It's not just that we need to help invest in our youth so that they can also develop and have international minutes, right? This is a metric that John uses all the time. And Bev, how many international minutes does a 17, 18, or 19-year-old have before they play for the U20s or the first team? But it's also on the dual side as well. So, you know, if you notice on the U17s, if you go down the list on that U17 roster that's in Guatemala, you're going to find a significant number of those players have the option to play in a lot of other countries. And let me remind everybody about one other thing, just to tie a nice bow around it. We started talking about Doha, right? So Morocco does something that blows everybody's mind and everybody's like cheering on for Morocco that united the Arab world. It was awesome. Morocco had 14.
Yeah.
14 of their players not born in Morocco. 14. Think of that number, right? So that is the world that we're in right now with, you know, with transparent, you know, boundaries and borders. And John and Bev 100% understand that. And the last thing I'm going to say, you know, because I've been involved with Canada soccer for a while. In the olden years, we probably had a net negative dual national ratio. I think in more recent years, we have a net positive dual national ratio. We probably won more than we've lost, in other words, and we just got to continue that moving forward.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Nick, almost out of time here, but there's so many layers of the CBA. We can't get into it, obviously. Yeah. Image rights, though, I do find interesting. You signed Fonzie to that deal before Christmas. How does that work? Obviously, not each player will get an individual deal, I wouldn't think. But at what point does Christine get approached, being the figurehead of the women's program?
So let me put a couple things to bed right away, okay? Christine signed to be with the Players Association. So Christine's deal will be with the Players Association. It was her choice to sign with the Players Association. So the name, imaging, licensing rights will be afforded to all women who sign with the Players Association on the women's side. I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want to extend my comment. But all you have to do is say, hey, did all the men sign on the men's side for the Players Association? I'm going to leave it at that. Okay. What we want to do is we want to make sure that everybody has the same fee or ratio or shared revenue package, whatever you want to call it. So that was our tactical approach to basically say, hey, Fonzie, this is what we're offering. You know, if you sell a jersey, shared revenue, this is what you're going to get. Knowing that if Fonzie's team agrees, everybody else should agree as well. Right. So that's the approach we're taking. People think that we're going to offer something different from one to the other. That's not our intent at all. It's to offer everybody the same. So talking about the compensation, the World Cup prize money. Yeah. The NIL was part of it. The players, friends and family was also part of it. Right. No one seems to be talking about that anymore. Why? Because I thought we did a really good job with friends and family. In fact, the feedback I got from players and friends and family was that we did an amazing job in giving the friends and family what they wanted, an experience of a lifetime in Doha. So that friends and family deal is the exact same friends and family deal that we're going to give the women when they go to Australia and New Zealand. So it's weird in a way because those two things were supposed to be part of the negotiation. One of them has already come and gone in a way, right? The other one we've already started kind of working on. It really just boils down to the percentage of money that we're going to split between the men and the women and whatever chunk's going to be left over for Canada soccer. We're not that far off. I can only tell you that the percentages that we were banding about back in June are the similar percentages that we're banding back today. So we're going to end up somewhere in that region.
Fascinating stuff. So when you got the job, Nick, did you anticipate all this work?
God, no. Hey, look at my office, dude. It's like 7:41 Eastern. I'm a professor. As soon as I get off the phone with you fine folk, I got to go back to marking goddamn exams. Okay, that's what I do for a living. But it's been awesome. It's been exhilarating. I've learned a lot. I think that it takes a certain type of individual to really flourish in this position, if I'm being honest, right? Like my skin has become thicker. It wasn't thick when I started because I was getting my ass kicked for every single damn thing that was happening in the organization, whether I had something to do with it or not. It didn't matter, right? It's like, you're the punching bag. You signed up for it. Take a couple of punches. So I know that people do that because they love the sport. And the reason why I know that is because that's why I came in, right? 10 years ago when I started, I was the guy sitting out there that watched us lose 8-1. I was the guy that played soccer all through youth, playing semi-pro. I was the guy that coached my kids. I was the same guy as all the people that are passionate about the game today. There are things that I've been able to move the dial on, right? Things we've talked about on this call already, but there's so much more to go, right? And that's what I've learned. That's the benefit that you get from really visiting a World Cup and meeting 211 presidents, because they tell you all the things you should be doing. There's so much more we can do. So in my mind, guys, it's really not about the next couple of years or 26, even though that's very, very important to me and to the whole organization. It's really about how are we going to leave this sport 10, 15, and I know it's hard to believe, but like 20 years out, how are we going to make it different 20 years from now? And that's what a strategist does. Eh? This is my area of expertise. So that's what I'm hoping to do. And the great thing about it is you can't do it by yourself. I got an awesome team. I got a board that's 100% dedicated. It's not just me, guys. Think of all the board members, 13 other people that signed up to volunteer for something that were in the middle of the crosshairs during the last 6 months. You know, we don't comment on Charmaine Crooks enough. Charmaine Crooks is the vice president of this organization. She is a bloody globally respected Olympian superstar. And the amount of counsel that I get from Charmaine is unbelievable. She's the first female vice president in the 100-plus history of our organization. You know, and I just want to give props to the people that really stick their necks out. I'm just the spearhead at the top who's the volunteer. The staff who do the work day in and day out, they're the ones that deserve all the kudos. Because you know what, guys? There weren't a lot of countries in Doha when I sat down with presidents who said, hey, do you have a women's team that's gold medalist in the Olympics? Oh, and a men's team that made the World Cup final in 36 years? How many countries can you count that could say that? And we could. So we just got to keep it going.
Will there be changes, though, at Canada Soccer so you can really capitalize on that success and maybe generate the revenue that you need to fuel the running of those youth teams?
Always, Amy. We never sit still. I can tell you that Earl Cochrane, as we speak, is trying to fulfill his direct reports. You know, when Earl was put into the position, Peter Montopoli and Joe Guest had retired. Those two gentlemen take, 30-plus years of experience with them? So it's been difficult to fill those positions. We want to fill them with the right people, right? So there's three C-level positions reporting to Earl that are going to be coming down the pipe soon. The chief operating officer, which is the person who's responsible for the day-to-day. The chief sporting officer, which, as you know, almost every other federation around the world, well, you saw what happened in the U.S., right? It's the technical director sporting officer also left. In most nations around the world, the head coach on the women's side and the head coach on the men's side report to a technical lead. So we have that position coming as well. And then the third one, which answers your question, Amy, is a chief commercial officer. The number one business objective is to grow our revenues. We must do that. We cannot be a $20 million organization anymore. We've been a $20 million organization for the last 10 years. With 2026 around the corner, we got to be an organization that's at least double that size. So we're going to have and bring the talent in. I can assure you that the staff and more importantly, the board, that's our commitment, is to make sure that we bring those right people in that can do the changes that are necessary to grow the business.
Nick, at one point, do you see us having a national training center?
You know what? I would love to. That's another thing I'm embarrassed to say that we don't have. And you know what? With FIFA funding for 26, there's a portion of it that is legacy funding. So, for example, I was on the committee for Pan Am games, right? So part of the legacy for the Pan Am soccer games were that we were able to turf with FIFA Class 2 turf fields, fields that didn't have that turf field or those nightlights. So there is an opportunity. I'm going to tell you that I would want it to be a priority. It's not as much of a priority as our other priorities. How would I put it that way? And the reason for that, Jamie, is because that's a significant investment. And I just admitted to you guys that our number one priority is revenue growth, right? The last thing that I want to do right now is commit to revenue growth and spend all the money that we're generating in revenue on a training facility. It is important. I would love it for it to be a legacy. There are partners that want to partner with us because they know there's FIFA legacy with training facilities. I think it would be awesome from a variety of perspectives, not just a place for our national team to train, but also as a potential opportunity to help Project 8 with their initiative. We haven't spoken about Project 8, right? But there's an opportunity to dovetail on, you know, two entities that both need facilities. At the end of the day, there's two things, guys, that you need to build soccer in any country: money and facilities. Those two you have to have. And without those two, it becomes extremely difficult. So revenue growth is our top priority. We still need way more facilities. As you know, Jimmy, you're a former York guy yourself. The CPL, okay, it's great. We're piggybacking off some stadiums because that's Canada. We got to come up with a Canada solution. It's not the optimal solution, right? Soccer-specific stadiums of the right size to help support the CPL and to help support Project 8 and their initiative, it's easier said than done.
Speaking of Project 8, there were other stakeholders interested in Women's Professional League. And then Project 8, they may have caught some people off guard. I'm not entirely sure. How aware of that project were you when that was announced?
100%. Knew all about it. So did the board. So did all the staff months in advance. So Diana had reached out and wanted a copy of our document that specifies what are the standards necessary to receive sanctioning in a league. So if we argue that, I don't know the exact date, but let's assume Project 8 went, I don't know, live in public right after the World Cup. Let's say December, just to use a round date. I don't know exactly.
It was during the World Cup.
Let's say December then. So she had received that document 13 months prior to that. So she had a good amount of time, a whole year, to sit on the document, which stipulates what do you need for stadiums? What do you need for finances? What do you need for operations? What do you need for coaching certification, right? That's what Canada Soccer's role is to make sure that the private investors know what the minimum standards for sanctioning are. So that's what Project 8 needs. Project 8 needs to clear two hurdles, and our job is to assist them to make sure they understand exactly what's required to clear those two hurdles. The first hurdle is membership, right? So they got to come in front of the membership, just like CPL did, just like York 9 at the time did, right? Yeah. You have to become a member. The members have to let you in. It's like a club, right? They got to let you in. So there's criteria, and then there's sanctioning. The sanctioning hurdle is the more difficult one, I'll be honest with you guys, because it involves the promise of money and the promise of stadiums and operations. And that's what Project 8 is undertaking right now for the next few months. Okay. They need to put the pieces together to adhere to those standards that we've stipulated to them. So the answer to your question is, yeah, we were well aware and we've been supporting them, you know, at least 12 months prior to them going public. And more importantly, Bria Carr-Harris, who's our head of women's professional soccer, her responsibility is to hold Project 8's hand as they go through the review process for membership and sanctioning. But it's not 100% guaranteed. Nothing is. Not just like it wasn't for the CPL. right?
Are they your preferred partner, or are you open to all sorts of options?
We don't care. I mean, it's not about being preferred or not. That's the best part about having standards. You meet the standard, guess what? You get the check mark, right? It's the same thing with the CPL. You know, they met the standard in terms of what the financial requirements were, the stadiums, the number of teams, and that's what's going to happen with Project 8 as well. So now the difference is from the time, you know, CPL and a bunch of principals wrote down on the back of a napkin at a restaurant that I sat at with Victor and a few others to the time they kicked their first soccer ball, it was, let me just say, a significant number of years, if that's the right way to say it. So Project 8, to their credit, it's not that they've only been doing it, you know, for 2 years. Project 8's been working on this for a long time, as I'm sure Diana will tell you herself. It's a very aggressive timeline, is what I'm trying to say. A very aggressive timeline. So what we got to do is we got to make sure that there's very, very, you know, distinct clarity in terms of what's required, because that's the job that she's working on right now, right? She's trying to secure the investors, the sponsors, the broadcasters, you know, the stadium. And on the stadium front, it's not easy. Sharon, I don't have to tell you, how many stadiums do we actually have where you can actually play soccer in, right?
Not many.
Summer. Not many, right? So you're going to probably have to beg, borrow, and steal, if you know what I mean. Like, you're not going to have the wherewithal to build anything new, that's for sure. So this is going to take some partnership and some collaboration. We're going to have come up with innovative solutions. Let me also say, I'm a big fan, and I've said this to Project 8, of just break the rules, man. Like, be innovative. Like, we don't have to have 8 pre-existing new clubs. That's what the CPL did, right? New Forge, New Atletico, you know, New York 9. We don't have to do that. There's nothing that stops us from being creative. Maybe we get Montreal and Toronto FC on the MLS side. Maybe we get Forge and York and Atletico on the CPL side. Maybe we get Vaughan and Woodbridge on the League One side. Maybe we even go as low as community clubs. Oakville Soccer Club. Anybody have any idea how big the Oakville Soccer Club is? It's a big club. Massive. One of the biggest in North America. Maybe Oakville Soccer Club is interested in creating a little nugget on the top of their pyramid. No one ever said that the 8 clubs that are going to start this women's pro league are homogeneous, to use a technical term. Maybe the solution, the Canadian solution, is that at the beginning they're heterogeneous, because that's the only way we can actually make the standards work.
But as you mentioned before, some of that FIFA legacy money could be used to really help Canada not only build soccer-specific infrastructure, but to really help prop up Project 8, much the way Canada Soccer did to the CPL in the early days.
Yeah, well, not only that, Amy, but it's also for 2026, right? Like, we know that, for the lack of a better term, BMO Field and BC Place are not perfect, right? They're going to need work, right? So it's really about making sure that we optimally allocate whatever funds, which FIFA hasn't announced yet, but whatever funds are going to be available, we're going to have to leverage those. I mean, I can tell you off the top of my head, we know that BMO Field needs more capacity. We know that because they don't meet the minimum threshold of 45,000. So they're definitely going to have to put a second tier on the north side above the food building, and they're going to have to put a second tier on the south side above the parking lot. We know that for a fact. But then the same thing goes with BC Place. They need upgrading and changes as well. And I know none of you have asked me this question, but I'll ask it for you. What was the one biggest learning you took away from Qatar? I'm going to tell you what it was. It actually wasn't the soccer at all. It was the fan fests. The fan fests were awesome, outstanding, amazing, all day from 9 in the morning. You take a break for 90 minutes to watch the game, and then they bloody hell continued again till 2 in the morning. I'm talking about like 750,000 people enjoying themselves, eating, culture, lifestyle, food, exchanging jerseys, pins. That, to me, was the power of football, unifying the whole world. Right away, where did my brain go to? I'm from Scarborough, so I know Toronto way better than Vancouver. My brain went to BMO Field right away, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is what we could do with CNE and then Ontario Place across the lakeshore and the pavilions and the convention center. We could create our own amazing, you know, fan fest experience as well, right? So there's a lot of learning to do. And, you know, back to answering Amy's question, that's really part of our job, right? Is to learn, you know, what are the optimal investments? Where do the scarce resources come from? The good news is that Peter stayed with FIFA, right? He may have left Canada Soccer, but he moved over to the, you know, the equivalent of the FIFA organizing committee in 26. So why is that good news, Amy? Because Amy, for the first time in what, 100 plus years history, we got people in the right places. Right? Think of Victor and where, and the table that he sits at, and think of now Peter and the table that he sits at. Because prior to those two, guess what? I'd be, like I told you, walking into Doha, opening a door, going, hey, I've been invited to a party and I don't know anybody in this room. So let's get cracking.
Your wife would be with David Beckham, though, so you have an in there.
No problem in negotiating with anybody. So, you know, she's the consummate saleswoman. She'll be fine no matter where we end up.
Hey, Nick, our 20-minute chat is now approaching 55 minutes. So I want to thank you so much. This always a pleasure. It's going to be a really fun 3.5 years and a really fun 2023 for the women's game in particular. So thanks so much. We'll do it again soon, hopefully.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, another really, I guess, candid, in-depth interview with Nick. He's very good with his time with us. One thing I just want to clarify here regarding Fonzie and the image rights before everything blows up here. What Nick's referring to was actually really well written by Neil Davison of Canada Press. Geez, when was this? A few months ago now. Essentially, the deal is that Fonzie has a third party that already owns his image rights. AD19, right? So he's still part of the union, but when Canada Soccer's negotiating image rights with the union, this falls outside that jurisdiction, essentially. Right. If that makes sense.
Kind of does, right?
Like, yeah, let me just read the paragraph I found in the article, which kind of clarifies it better than I could possibly put it. Canada Soccer's initial understanding had been that such rights would lie with the newly formed Canadian Men's Player Association, but Davies' rights actually belong to a third-party company, Davies' own AD19 Inc. So there you go. That's what Nick was referring to there, whereas Christina hasn't got a third-party company owning her image rights, therefore she can negotiate through the union. This is modern sports for you. Isn't it exciting and interesting?
Well, I guess it's also, so if he does sign with the union, those things are spoken for.
Yeah,
and off the table. They're off the table, right?
Yeah.
And if they are on the table, then negotiation has to happen with this AD19, correct?
I would think so. Yeah. Even if that's a possibility.
Yeah. Yep.
And I wonder, I don't know whether other players have other third-party companies owning their image rights. Would John David, you think it would make sense?
I mean, those are the two guys. We've talked about this before, and it was always the John David, Fonzie conversation about the guys who are living a different lifestyle than most of the Canada men's national team, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And listen, this isn't uncommon in professional football sports. Most big names, you name them, have their own image rights. They own them. They're a big part of contract negotiations, personal terms. So nothing to flag there, really. Before we leave, because it is almost an hour now, I did mention we'll quickly touch on Man City and Jesse Marsh. Okay, where do we start here? Craig, let's start with Jesse Marsh. Are you surprised?
Yes. Only because they were allowing him to bring in Ramos as an assistant coach. I figured, well, if they're going to allow that, why would they pull the trigger after one more result?
Yeah, Armas is going to be on the sidelines on Wednesday against United as well, interim coach.
Did you say Ramos?
Armas.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that's going to be something special, isn't it? Club that fired him, and all of a sudden now you just join a. How long has he been at Leeds now? Like 2 weeks?
Yeah, like 24 hours.
Yeah. Remember, I told you
that now the last. Intern, going back to United?
We got fired by TFC, ends up at United.
He was waiting on his. He was waiting. Remember, I said he was waiting on his visa to be. And now he might be a visa-less head coach. Head gaffer.
He's just following up. He's falling upwards, isn't he?
Dude, he's killing it.
Hey, if you're an American, if you're American, you want to be a Toronto FC, you're going to get your stepping stone because Toronto FC is an American development team. It is. Fucking is. Well, let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, tough to argue, that's for sure. And I mentioned that Jesse Marsh is being linked with the US men's national team job. Obviously, Berhalter's being investigated internally for those incidents of 30 years past, and who knows what's happening there, but that's a story to keep your eye on. And Man City, listen, we can't talk about this and just 5 minutes, but we'll try very quickly. As I'm sure everyone knows by now, the Premier League have charged City with over 100 charges regarding financial irregularities, the misreporting of financial information over almost a 10-year period between 2009 and I think 2018, around there sometime. This is huge. This is potentially massive. The sanctions possible for them if they're found guilty and it goes to an independent commission is point deduction, huge fines, and even relegation. Yeah. My God.
You wait till those lawyers that they hire at £10,000 an hour get at these other guys. They'll eat them alive.
Well, it'll be, at the very least, it'll be stuck in court for a long time, you'd think, wouldn't it?
Oh, this is going to go on for a long time. But it is dirty, and we've been expecting something like this, and we're looking at other clubs as well, and it's just out of hand. And it's actually discouraging to me as a fan of the game, just how outrageously crazy this game has gotten spending.
I remember, Craiger, I remember us being at we did a live show at Betty's. JC was there. My daughter Lila was there. We were there. And Dickio, you and Dickio explained FFP to me. And this is about 3 years ago. Remember that one, Sharms? It was a family day. And we spent our family day getting drunk.
I do remember that. And I wish I remember it because I'd love to hear Dickio's explanation of FFP.
Right, I'll tell you one club, though.
You may be able to spell it.
No, Chelsea's got to be... Hey, Chelsea's got to be panicking a little bit as well, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
The amount of money that they're spending. I think a lot of Premier League clubs now are going to be going back into the books and thinking, uh-oh.
Yeah.
We've got to try to cover up some tracks here and see what's going to happen. But the one big thing that I'm very interested to see is whether Pep leaves or not. Because the more that comes out, and he actually said, if the club ever lies to him, then he's going to walk away. So I'm sure over the years, he's probably talking to the board and talking to the administrators and saying, are we good? Is everything okay? Because he obviously wants to be part of a clean club. And now that this is all coming out,
kind of clean.
Very good.
He must have some suspicions. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Look at his employers. I mean, come on.
We got a great new sponsor, Pep. It's the same company owned by our owner. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Not as good as a wink to a blind bat. You know what I'm saying? So, come on, Pep. Let's not play the complete innocent here. What was interesting, though, is that it's an independent commission, and the Premier League rules dictate that you cannot appeal that in the Court of Arbitration of Sport, which is what they did with the UEFA deal, right? So this comes with some teeth. And if they're found guilty, listen, all allegedly, okay? It's all allegedly right now.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is too with Europe and UEFA, I think it's after 6 years or something. Anything past 6 years, then they can't touch. It's
not in this case. Not in the
in the Premier League, it doesn't matter. It could be 15 years and they can go all the way back and track everything. So it's a completely different ballgame now. And that was one of the reasons why they got away from it before dealing with UEFA is because
Well, Mancini was paid $1.45 million to coach City, right?
Yeah.
During the same time, he was also paid $1.75 million to coach, who was it? It was a Middle Eastern club. I forget now who it was, for 4 games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I have to ask Sharms to say that nudge and wink thing about, I've never heard that saying.
Nod's as good as a wink to a blind bat.
Fuck me. How come you've never used that before?
That all is, I think, podcasts. From... There's a famous TV show in England called Blackadder, Rowan Atkinson. I think it came from that.
Bats are blind, Wonger, just in case you didn't know.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Great Rowan hearing, Atkinson. Though.
Same hometown as John Herdman and Bev.
Rowan Atkinson?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's all secular. You see, it all comes around in the end, doesn't it?
All comes around. Yeah. Herdman and Priestman.
Yeah, pretty soon John will be... Black Adder.
Going back to Pep, though, did you guys see him complaining and maybe as an excuse when they lost to Tottenham? He was complaining about the 4-hour-plus bus ride.
Oh, my God, London. Yeah. We're exhausted.
Like, God, imagine him playing in MLS.
Oh, yeah, good luck.
And what about the London clubs going up to Manchester each week? Aren't they also exhausted?
What about Southampton? That's an 8-hour drive. Do you fly when you're in Southampton to London, Jimmy?
Freaking Newcastle.
No, if you went up north, we flew. Okay. North, we flew all the time. Well, unless we were going to London. Because
Norwich had more money than City, right? So they could fly. City can't afford to.
I won't tell you about the plane.
Norwich is in a situation in the country where it's just not worth flying anywhere. The guy who drops you off at the airport is the guy who picks you up at the other side.
Yeah, it's true. And before the flight, I was like that with the propellers trying to spin them.
Oh, well, that's a fun show today, guys. Thank you very much. We'll reconvene on Wednesday, and we shall return on Wednesday night. Friday, are you back this Friday, Amy, or not? This is one you're off this Friday, I forget.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Toronto, I think.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool.
Taking a day off already.
Yeah, I know. Hey, you were the one that was late.
1 minute. I couldn't get on. The train left, right, I guess.
For the interview that he set up.
Right.
All right, time to go. Keep buying newspapers. Cheers for listening. Bye.
Join the conversation on Twitter. Help us fill Wanger's mail sack at footy_prime. What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.